Blog Talk Radio.
Right into this world, all alone. Gotta take your soul, you're on your own. The crow flies straight, a perfect line.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a live edition of Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin. And I should be joined with a co-host in the next few minutes, but as for the meantime, you'll just have to listen to me. I apologize for that. But it's been a while since we've been on air full time. Before long, we'll be starting back Wednesday and Sunday evenings from 8:30 p.m. Eastern to 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Just hope everybody had a good week. Hope everybody's ready to talk some sports tonight. And want to start off the show on a sad note and a positive note as well. But on Tuesday of this past week, we lost a valued member of the family. My wife, Michelle, lost her granddad, Papa Smith, Buddy Smith, his name. He's a listener of the show. He's a dear friend, a great granddad, just everything a man should be. He passed away, went on to be with the Lord Tuesday, and that's the good news is, you know, we never have to worry where Buddy is and what legacy he left behind. But it's just been a real difficult time for the family. Even though we know we have peace knowing where people end up, it's still very hard for the people left behind, especially when you left a legacy that Buddy left. And I met Buddy. He's been in my life for 9 years, about 9 years, and it's been a great 9 years knowing that I had him to talk to if I ever needed to, getting to spend time with him. His lovely wife, Carol, the best grandmother in the world, too. She survived this, and everybody on the show, make sure you keep her in your prayers. But it just shows everybody, this last month has shown me a lot, especially when it comes to family, how important having a strong connection with your family is. And remember, family doesn't have to be blood. I'm closer to people that's not my blood than I am with people that I share the same DNA with. But if you have somebody out there, you haven't spoken with them in a while, mom, dad, anybody, make sure you work on getting that relationship better. Because one thing about Beth Smith's family and my family, so I call them my family because they are, but this is the strongest family that I've ever witnessed, ever seen. And I'm from a big family. You know, I thought I had a strong family, and I do. But when I look at this family, the way they handle adversity, the way they handle just this tragedy, and it's all about God, it's all about love, and it's all about each other. And that's how Buddy lived his life. Service was perfect yesterday, and nothing we could say would be enough to honor this man. But, you know, all you hear is legacy, honor, integrity, and the rock. Buddy was the rock of this family, and it's up to everybody else in this family to make sure we leave a good mark on that name. So, again, we just want to send our condolences to Carol, Memo Smith, and Becky, Lori, Lisa, and Boyd. Those are their surviving children, a million grandchildren that all did a great job at the service yesterday. And I know you're going to miss Buddy. I'm going to miss Buddy. I always look forward to Sunday nights or Wednesday whenever I was doing a show. He didn't make every show, but he made a lot of them. But it was always good to see his number pop up and know him and Matt Ball were listening. And I know they're listening tonight. I know Papa's in heaven with my son Emerson. So I love you guys. And if you're listening out there, just know that I'll be praying for you, and we'll get through this together as a family. And now on to the sports world. It's been a long time since, really, I've been paying attention to sports, but one thing I have been paying attention to, the NBA Finals, did get to watch the majority, and Cuervo's on the line. I'll bring him on in just a moment to discuss the NBA Finals winner, Golden State, 4-2 over Cleveland. And you know, I was pulling for Cleveland in this series, Cuervo. I don't know about you. I know you can't stand LeBron James, but to me, I had no choice but to pull for LeBron James in this series. Am I crazy, or what's going on?
Well, first of all, good evening to you, Tarvin. It's been a while, so it's good to hear from you again. But you know what? You're not the only one. I actually was pulling for Cleveland as well. And I shouldn't say pulling for Cleveland, but that's who I picked to win the series. Just because of the fact that they do have LeBron James on their team, who is the best player in the world, as he let everybody know. But that was obviously everyone that picked Cleveland, that was assuming that Kyrie Irving was going to play in that series. And then he goes down after game one and it kind of went downhill from there. So a lot of things changed for Cleveland, but they just didn't have enough talent on that team to overcome all the shooting that Golden State is capable of doing. So it just things unfolded. So yeah, I picked Cleveland as well. So you're not the only one.
Well, what upsets me is I was pulling for Cleveland until they lost and LeBron James's comments. And I know I heard your comments on it yesterday, but for him to come out, give no credit to Golden State, really, just to make excuses, to say they just had more talent. That's a slap in the face. And to also say he doesn't worry about anything. He's the greatest player in the world. I mean, come on. I mean, yes, you are the best player in the NBA. But by him saying that shows me, Cuervo, how insecure this guy is. I mean, he's starting to let it go to his head that he thinks in his mind he wants to be better than Jordan, which we know is never going to happen. He could win a title from now until Jesus comes back, but it's not going to happen. He is not Michael Jordan. And the sooner he realizes that and he just plays like LeBron James, everything's going to be fine. But the pressure's getting to him, Cuervo. I mean, you think about it, a six-game series against Golden State with what he had, just shut your mouth and go on. Everybody looked at you and said, wow, you won two games with this roster. And that's all he needed to say, Cuervo. He didn't need to say anything. But I think he hurt his legacy by those comments after the game, and now everybody's going to be gunning for the guy.
Oh, big time, Tyron. You know, for those people that thought he was an arrogant guy, to include myself, I think he validated it by the comments that he made. But you know what? I'm going to defend LeBron on something, and I never thought I would do this, but I'm going to actually defend LeBron on something. And that is the fact that the pressure that he feels about comparing himself to Michael is not his fault. Okay, it's everybody else around him that yeah. is the reason why that pressure is what it is. Because did he look up to Michael? Yeah, of course. I mean, who doesn't at that age? I have with the whole situation, Tarvin, is again, and we've talked about it on Sports Talk with the guys. We've talked about it on with Sonny on our show, and I'm sure it's been brought up here on Way In Sports. When you have all that hype around you and everybody's telling you how great you are, and you're 17 years old and you're a senior in high school, of course you're going to eat it up, you're going to soak it up, and you're going to start to really believe that you are the next, prodigal son of the NBA or however you want to call it, okay, bigger than Kobe, bigger than, all the other guys that were big-time, Allen Iverson back in 2003 and guys like that. So is it really LeBron that kind of created that whole image of, well, you can be just as great as Michael is? No, it's everybody else around him, the media, analysts, and all these people that hyped him up so much to the point where now that he's 12, 10, 11 years into his career, and he's only got two out of six titles to show for it, now they want to, they're the same people that are bashing him. So it's like, okay, which one do you want him to be? Do you want him to be the next Michael, or do you just want to bag on him because he's not the next Michael? So which one is it? And to even take that a step further, Tarvin, I don't even think his playing, his style of basketball, even comes close to being compared to Jordan. He is more of a wingman like a Scottie Pippen or even a Magic Johnson. His game doesn't even compare to how Michael played the game. Okay, if you want to compare anybody to Michael, he wears number 24 for the Los Angeles Lakers. So, to me, I defend LeBron at that aspect. You know, to sit here and talk about how he'll never be Jordan, of course he'll never be Jordan. That's not his style. No. That's not his game. So it's never going to happen. If you want to compare him to Magic, if you want to compare him to even Oscar Robertson, if you really want to go old school, those are guys that you would compare to LeBron James.
Yeah, there's no – you can't. And plus, it's a different era. People forget that. Kobe's the last of the Jordan generation, the type of basketball that I like to watch the most. But and let me tell everybody out there, LeBron James is the best player that I've seen, you know, in a long time. Like, Kobe's not in his prime anymore, but you give me Kobe Bryant, I'll take him any day in his prime over LeBron James. Give me Jordan. I mean, you know, there's some other players out there before my time that probably were better, but LeBron is such a physical specimen. He's fast. He's faster than most people. He's bigger than their people. He can just bully his way in. And he's getting better shooting and everything. But I think you're right. I think a lot of people have put this, as soon as he came in the league, is he the next Jordan? What's he going to do? And all of a sudden he wins a title. Okay, Jordan has six or whatever. How many is LeBron going to get? I think that's an unfair comparison. But LeBron James, his comments showed that it's getting to him. It's starting to get to him because, what is he, 2-4 in finals? So he's had – and a lot of these teams, Cuervo, two or three of them have sucked. So he's 2-4, but that Cleveland team was god-awful, the one he put out on the court, and actually was inches away from being up 3-1 in that series. Had LeBron James won the series, the Cleveland Cavaliers, you have to start thinking about LeBron in a different kind of category. But, you know, I'm all about being humble to an extent. I don't think Michael Jordan was cocky as hell. I mean, we know that. He was cocky, but he let it on the court. He showed it. But to come out in the media and to tell after a series that you lost because you ran out of talent, I mean, that's a slap in the face to your organization, to your teammates, to your fans, to the game of basketball. And that's what I'm trying to go to. Who out there that plays the game today, Cuervo, actually respects the game of basketball the way it's meant to be played? It's not a team game anymore.
No, it's not, Tarvin. And I think the problem that the NBA has is the fact that there is so lack of talent and so lack of marketing that they're gonna feed off whoever they can and for as long as they can. And in this aspect, you can compare him to Jordan. When it comes to marketing, when it comes to you can make the argument that he's right there with Michael, okay? Because he does sell shoes. He does have his, clothing line, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if he has his own actual brand, but he feeds off of Nike and whatnot. And he does jersey sales and for the kids out there that do buy his sneakers. Like, in that aspect, yeah, he's the closest thing to Michael, you know, since Michael. But in any other way, no, he's not. And, the other thing, too, is where you were talking about how he, pretty much threw his teammates under the bus by saying that they weren't good at to win a championship.
Cuervo, I think we've lost you. Are you there?
I'm here, Tarvin.
We lost.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead. Sorry.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I've been hearing you the whole time. Where did it cut off at? What I was saying is that, you know, to throw your team under the bus like that, yeah, that was pretty wrong. You know what I mean? Instead of saying, like, look, we're going to get back next year. Just we didn't have what it took or whatever. Because these are the same guys he's going to play with next year. You don't think that's going to leave a bad taste in their mouth as far as, well, this is the same guy that kind of, you know, told us we weren't good enough to win a championship and we weren't good enough, you know, play on his level or be a teammate, in other words. And, you know, that's going to leave a bad taste in a lot of these guys' mouths. And, you know, it's bad enough that Kevin Love and LeBron, you know, publicly weren't the best of friends and teammates and things like that. And it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Love is not back with Cleveland next year.
Well, you know, and Love is another. I think LeBron's close to being the next Kobe Bryant, where it's going to be hard to get players to want to play with him if he's not careful. He better check himself and make sure that arrogance and attitude and that selfishness that I've started seeing out of him, he better get it under control. Kobe's having trouble now because nobody wants to play with him anymore because he thinks he's still 23 years old and he's ready to walk off. But I'm tired of hearing about Love. I mean, he hasn't done anything in my mind. The guy's overrated, overpaid. He's never there when you need him. I mean, Cleveland wasn't that good, Cuervo, with Love. I think they were better without Love. Now, Irving and those guys like that, they need to be on the court, I think, for LeBron to win. But Love is not needed. So if you're Cleveland, do you really want Love? Or do you just ship him all, let him go, and get a couple of more role players and add some depth to that team? Because I just don't think Love's the answer for a championship with LeBron James.
Yeah, absolutely, Tarvin. I'm with you, man. It's, you know, it's going to be about what kind of teammate is this guy. You know, I mean, I think one lot of people want to talk, and I brought this up yesterday. What kind of coach do you think LeBron needs? Maybe the coaches that he's had in the past are guys that obviously he doesn't respect. He won't listen to. He disregards certain things to say and whatnot. And I think that plays.
Well, Cuervo, if you'll do me a favor and call right back in, and we'll see if we can get your connection better. You're cutting in and out, and that could be a Blog Talk Radio problem, but just call back in real quick and I'll get you in. But I don't think the coach is the problem, Cuervo. I don't think anybody in the NBA really matters when it comes to coaching, with the exception of Popovich and maybe the Hawks coach. But I just think LeBron James thinks he knows more than any coach. He made the coach look like a fool in the finals, in my opinion. And do you really want to play for a guy like this? At least Jordan, I mean, he had Phil Jackson. Don't get me wrong, but Jordan did show respect. He did listen to the coach. He may have been in the huddle telling him he didn't know what he was doing, but we didn't know that. LeBron James, his antics on the court, on the sideline, in the media, shows that the coach has no power. The last coach he had was terrible. The only guy that could kind of keep him in check was Pat Riley. And you saw in Miami, Pat Riley was the man, and LeBron James did as he was told, really. There was Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, but it was like he was more under control. But now, you know, they roll out the red carpet to bring him back. And, I mean, my God, they throw parades. He thinks they've made it, the owners of Cleveland made it known that no matter what, LeBron James called the shots, really. And when you have the prisoners running the asylum there, it can get it real interesting. I'm hoping Cuervo will call back. He was cutting out in a place, and he must have been in a dead area, but I'm hoping he calls back in just a minute. But LeBron James, I mean, you're the greatest right now in the game. There's no doubt about it, guy. Go out there and lead and be an example for everybody, all these kids looking up to professional athletes these days, because, my God, it's changed in the last 20 years to where there's no more honor, there's no more integrity, there's no more team. It's all about me, me, me. LeBron James, you have an obligation making the money you make, getting the fame you do. God reached down and touched you and gave you the most skill and talent to play the game of basketball. Be an influence to people. And, my God, I've seen it in the last few weeks to me, and I've been thinking about it more and more. What can I do personally to be a better influence on people that I come in contact with? LeBron James, there's no excuse for you to act like a 12-year-old kid and act like it all has to be about you, you, you. I mean, you could be in a factory working. Nothing wrong with that. Everybody's worked in a factory. But, I mean, you could be nothing. I mean, you're no better than anybody just because you play basketball. I mean, just because you play basketball doesn't make you better than anybody else. And it's not just LeBron. This is an epidemic throughout professional sports, and it's trickling down into the college game as well, to where these guys think they're entitled. They've been told all their life how great they are, how valuable they are, worship them. But LeBron James has a chance to start it all over again and just play the game for the love of the game. And Cuervo, I'm glad you're back with us, but LeBron James has a good 5 or 6 years left to where he could win a few more rings and everything. When do you think LeBron James looks in the mirror and realizes that part of the problem is LeBron James? And you were leaving and you were talking about the coach. I think Pat Riley is the only kind of person that could tame LeBron James. He's changed a lot since he's come over to Cleveland. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
Well, you know, Tarvin, and we talked about that yesterday with the scorekeeper and the big dog. You know, it seems like he's the old LeBron again. You know, before he went to Miami, like he took what he learned in Miami, the lessons that Pat Riley taught him, as far as be careful who you surround yourself with, and he totally threw that all away once he decided to go back right back to Cleveland. Because, you know, in Miami, yes, he was obviously a huge part in them getting to 4 straight NBA finals. However, he wasn't the quote unquote king like they treat him in Cleveland. So that right there, what that tells me is that as important as it is for him to win, I think it's even more important for him to be the guy that is the center of attention all the time. And he just loves attention. He wants to be the center of attention. He wants to be the end all be all. And that's where he goes wrong, because now he's going back to, you know, having his crew with him all the time. And, you know, Pat Riley had put an end to all that. He said, well, who are these guys? Who do they think they are, and where do they think they're going? And Pat Riley put a stop to it. You know, even though as much as LeBron hated it, it equaled championship rings. So now that he's back in Cleveland, he went back to his old ways, and now you see the result. You know, you got a guy that is, like I said, you know, has no respect for his head coach, has very little respect for the owner, and I kind of understand why. But at the same time, he's the one that signed your paycheck, so you might wanna at least pretend to like him a little bit. You know,
exactly.
So.
And Cuervo, I think you did talk on this yesterday, because I did catch a little bit of it. I was at a funeral to attend yesterday, but. LeBron James not going to college, not playing for a coach like Mike Krzyzewski. Just imagine LeBron 3 years at Duke where, shit, I don't care how good you are, Mike Krzyzewski is Duke. He's the man. The coach in college basketball represents the university. If you don't do it his way, he'll kick you off the team or get you on the bench. Even in high school, you think a high school coach is going to really discipline LeBron when he's going to win him a state championship every year? Come on. Let's get real. But he missed out by not having those few years to mature and actually fall under a leadership of a coach like Mike Krzyzewski or Boeheim from Syracuse.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to college, you got guys that can look to their coach as a mentor, and I think that's something that LeBron never had. Going from high school straight to the pros, he never had that. Now everybody's going to say, well, Kobe Bryant did the same thing. Well, you got to remember, when Kobe was young, it wasn't as broadcasted. It wasn't as then. You didn't have Twitter, and you didn't have social media back then. But I'm telling you right now, if they were the same age, we'd be talking about Kobe Bryant the same way. And, you know, so as far as that is all concerned, I think what you have there is you got a guy that, again, he's never really had a mentor, okay, in a basketball perspective. And you have a guy that doesn't understand what it means to be on a team. And he came into the league with it. He had that self mentality. It's all about himself. It's all about him. And he never understood what it meant to be on a team and be a team player and things like that. So I think that's where LeBron went wrong. And even if he would have went to Ohio State, stay local, stay home. A guy like Thad Matta, the coach at Ohio State, I think is a good enough coach to teach him some basic team concepts and what it means to be a leader and things like that. And you know, something I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Tarvin, I've never really felt like LeBron was a leader. LeBron has always been things. It's always been a situation with LeBron James where he just so happens to be the best player on the court, and that's why everybody gives him so much attention. You know, he's not an alpha male. He's not a leader. He's not a guy that really makes – I don't believe he makes guys around him better. It's just he's so damn more talented than everybody else that it's the perception of, well, he makes Dellavedova better. Oh, he makes Tristan Thompson better. No, those guys just kind of – started doing the right thing at the right time. That's all. That was timing when it came to that stuff. Dellavedova got the opportunity to play because Kyrie Irving got hurt. If Kyrie Irving never would have gotten hurt, we still wouldn't know who the backup point guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers is. So it was more about timing with those guys. You know, Kevin Love gets hurt. Irving gets hurt. Barrazal gets hurt. If Barrazal doesn't get hurt, they never trade for Timothy Mozgov. So, you know, to sit here and say LeBron makes guys around him better, I don't agree with that necessarily, and it's not because of the hate that I have for LeBron. It's just my perception of it. He's so much more talented than everybody else that it
reminds
seem
me of Durant.
Like he makes everybody better.
Yeah, he reminds me of Durant.
Yeah.
He's Durant's talented.
Comparison.
Yeah, he's talented, but he's never the one on the court, the leader. I look at a leader, and like when I look at Michael Jordan, he's a leader. He would get in your face. He wouldn't try to humiliate you, but if you're not doing your job to help him win, he's in your face. Kobe the same way. The leader. Shaq was never a leader. You know, Shaq understood that. And I'm going to have to mute you just for 1 second, Cuervo. I'm getting a lot of static, and I'm going to check my phone too to make sure it's not mine. Let me just check this. But I mean, the leadership thing, you don't learn to be a leader. So if everybody thinks that LeBron James is going to all of a sudden decide, hey, I'm going to be a leader, it's not that easy. People are born leaders, they're born followers, and then you have a category of pretenders. And if he starts trying to act like it, we know he's a pretender. LeBron James, a great, great talent. I'm not sitting here trying to deny that. I've always known how talented he was. Cuervo, you know how talented he is, but he's not just going to start next year and be a leader. People on the court do not look at him as a leader. He doesn't even communicate with his own teammates. He goes over to himself, does his own thing. He doesn't try to make people around him better. He just expects them to do good so he can win. But I just don't think LeBron cares about anyone else. If that was the case, he would have bonded more with Love and tried to make it a team, Cuervo, but he just kind of let Love do his thing and never did anything. That was a red flag for me.
Yeah, and even in Miami, I mean, I never really saw that from him. I think Dwayne Wade's more of a leader than LeBron is. I think that, you know, guys like that, you're talking about, you know, guys that truly have that voice that you need, that presence, that, you know, like I said, the alpha male. And, well, you know, when you're talking about Dwayne Wade, you're talking about a guy that did go to college, that did play in an Elite Eight with Marquette or however far they got in the tournament. So he understands what it means to really, truly be a part of a team. And I don't think
LeBron ever, he didn't experience that in high school because it's different. Like you said, you think a high school coach is going to really, put the hammer down on him if he does something wrong? No, that guy's riding the train just like everybody else did when he came out of high school. And, the money train and the TV and all the exposure that the school was getting. Well, those guys, he could have went out and robbed a bank and everybody would just turn a blind eye to it because, hey, we're getting exposure. The school's getting exposure. Everybody's throwing money and all that stuff. So it's crazy. It was crazy.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's this Thursday night. I don't mean to talk about LeBron James forever, and I apologize for that. But the NBA draft is going to be on Cuervo.
Yeah, it is. It's on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking at something on ESPN, and it started playing on my iPad. I'm sorry. I didn't want y'all to be hearing what I was listening to. But the NBA draft, you know, the difference between the NFL draft, you know, the season's over. Seems like an eternity before that draft comes. Basketball's over a week later, we're doing the draft, and which team is going to fall sucker and take that kid Okafor out of Duke early? I mean, tell me, in your opinion, Towns is going to be the number one pick for Minnesota. Don't you agree? There's no other number one on that board, in my opinion. Tell me what you think, Cuervo. Convince me if you think so. Who's number one?
Who's number one picking in Minnesota, right?
Minnesota and then the Lakers.
Then the Lakers. Anthony Towns, I think, wouldn't be the worst pick. But I think you have to look at Jahlil Okafor out of Duke as well. You're talking about a kid that, come on, Tarvin. I mean, you're talking about a big man who climbed all the way to the top as a freshman, won an NCAA title, maybe he doesn't quite understand what it means to be a leader because he had juniors and seniors on the team. But, I mean, that's okay, though, because you've got guys that he's not expected to be, the right away, second coming of Kevin Garnett up there in Minnesota. I mean, he's going to be a guy that is going to be learning and things like that under some of the veterans and whatnot. And I don't know, personally, I think Okafor would be just as good of a pick as Towns would be. But I think either way they go, those guys are going to be one and two. So, Minnesota can go either way, and I think they'll be all right. And the Lakers will pick whoever, the other guy.
Well, see, I'll tell you this about Towns. He's more physical. He's tougher. He can shoot better. And I just think he has the better pedigree in my mind. I think Okafor, one thing about him, he cannot play a lick of defense. And just say if you're the Lakers and you pick him or something. And I heard Colin Cowherd talking about this, and it made sense. It made sense when he said it. You're going to put a terrible defender on the Lakers, and that's already what they have. And now you're going to be expected to guard Curry, Thompson, all those guys from Golden State for the next few years. So the Lakers better be careful that they don't fall in the trap of getting this guy. And Krzyzewski's interview talking about him, and one thing he said is, like, he needs a lot of polishing, like, just a lot. He's not ready to come in and play at this level. So if you're going to pick somebody at the top two or three, they're expected to come and play immediately. I guarantee you Towns will start immediately for Minnesota and probably be an all-star within 3 years, but he will contribute. I just think Okafor could be a bust. And there's another kid, you know, the guy from Wisconsin. What's his name? It flipped my mind all of a sudden, the big guy. You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, I think he's a bust.
I don't think he's going to be that good
bust
either.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I agree with
Willie
Carvin.
Collie,
I don't think
Willie,
that great.
Willie Cauley-Stein. Willie Cauley-Stein is projected at number 8. I watched him at Kentucky, and Cuervo, I'm just not impressed. I mean, okay, you get four points, 12 boards, and 4 blocks. Really? Who cares? I mean, this guy's terrible, and I just don't understand what everybody out there is saying. And but one thing I wanted to bring to your attention, Cuervo, in the projection, the fourth guy and the fourth, fifth, and sixth picks. One's from Latvia, one's from China, and one's from Croatia. Do you really think people haven't learned their lesson yet to quit trying to take these players early from these countries? I mean, I would rather have a guy in college that played and proved himself there, wouldn't you, than in China or somewhere like that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Tarvin, it's very rare that you draft a guy top 10 from one of the European leagues that turns out to be a gem, okay? There's only so many Dirk Nowitzkis out there, and there's only so many guys that come over from overseas and really make an immediate impact in the NBA. You're just not going to find those guys. And Dirk is really the only guy in today's game that you can say came from those leagues, unless I'm missing someone, that really made an immediate impact on their team in the NBA. Some of them don't even come to the NBA until 2 or 3 years after. You know, for example, I'm sure you heard the name before, but for the Chicago Bulls, you had a rookie by the name of Nikola Mirotic, came over from the Spanish league and did very well his rookie year. And I think he was the runner-up to Andrew Wiggins for Rookie of the Year. Well, what a lot of people may not know is that the Bulls actually drafted the rights to him 3 years ago, and he just came to the league last year. So that's another risk that you take, Tarvin, is if you're going to draft one of these guys, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that they're coming over the very next year. Ricky Rubio in Minnesota did the same thing. So it's a high-risk, high-reward with those guys from the European leagues and from, you know, China and from Australia, you know, the kid for the Utah Jazz that they drafted from Australia. It's very rare that they actually come over after their first year and play, and not just play, but actually have an impact on their team.
Yeah, and that's a good point. In the NBA drafts this week, we'll discuss it, but I'm interested to see what the Lakers do. I'm interested to see what the Cavs can do to build around LeBron, and it's just not like the NFL, Cuervo. We built this show on football and more football, Cuervo, and that's what we're going to get into tonight. I know you're probably foaming at the mouth, but I do have to ask you this question, and I need your honest assessment here, Mr. Cuervo. Cam Newton's big contract he signed, I mean, it's a huge, huge contract. What do you think about it, and did the Panthers do the right thing by doing this?
I didn't catch the last part, Tarvin. I heard you say something about your boy Cam Newton.
Yeah, the contract he signed, I mean, you know, it's big money. I mean, a lot of guaranteed money as well. Did Carolina make the right decision? Because I look at it like this. Who else would Carolina get to be able to do what Cam Newton's done? Quarterbacks are not a dime a dozen. I wanted to hear your thoughts on Cam Newton's contract. Did he deserve it? Did he earn it? What do you think?
No, I don't think – I don't think he's earned it yet, Tarvin. At the same time, though, it was the right decision because, of like you just said, if you don't re-sign Cam Newton, unless you somehow pull off the robbery of the century and you trade for, like, Aaron Rodgers, or you trade for, you know, somebody like that who's already in the prime of their career, you're not going to get better. You're not going to upgrade much more than what you have already with Cam Newton. So has he earned that type of money that he got? No. But unfortunately, in the NFL, that is the one position where you have to bite the bullet and, you know, pay for your guy, the guy that you have. I mean, look at Jay Cutler in Chicago. That guy ain't worth half the money that he's making. But if it wasn't going to be Jay that they signed to the big deal, then, you know, what other options are out there? And, you know, re-signing McCown and making him the guy, I mean, look how that turned out. It was a disaster for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. So
Unfortunately, that's the nature of the business, though. If you want to have at least a chance, then you have to lock up your quarterback. And for Carolina, their guy is Cam Newton. So he's not necessarily worth the money, in my opinion, Tarvin. But at the same time, the Panthers did do the right thing by signing him to the long-term
I think there's several, and I agree with everything you said there, everything. And I think there's just a couple, few, maybe just several quarterbacks that are worth that money. Andrew Luck, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, those guys are it. I mean, you don't find these guys anymore. I don't know what's happened to the quarterback play. Maybe it's college has moved more to the spread. And you look at these players like Brady, Andrew Luck, and Rodgers, they're just pure pocket passers. They can thread a needle. They're smart. But college, I mean, name me a quarterback in college right now, Cuervo, that you could say, wow, can't wait to see him get to the NFL. I can't think of one.
Yeah, that's because there isn't one. There isn't one.
I don't know.
You don't get Andrew Lucks every year. You don't get Peyton Mannings, you don't get Cam Newtons every year. You don't get those type of guys where, it's a guy that wows you from, coming out of college. And it may not happen again for another 5 years. The next big thing at the quarterback position may not even be in college yet. Like, that's how lack of talent at the quarterback position we have in college right now. Unless I'm missing somebody, I really don't think there's a guy right now that we have our eye on that can say, man, that guy can make an immediate impact on an NFL franchise.
Unless the offenses start changing in the NFL, I think, the entertainment level in the NFL, people like scoring. They like these quarterbacks. They like fantasy numbers. They may have to change fantasy scoring for quarterbacks just to get a few points for quarterbacks, because the spread, the hurry up, spread people out in college football is being taught by more and more and more teams and coaches. These camps, that's all they focus on. So, but the NFL seems like a league. It's just like, now you have to fit into our model. And I just don't think a lot of quarterbacks right now, I mean, Cam Newton can throw. That's one good thing about him. And he can run. But there's some of these quarterbacks like Mariota that was drafted. I don't think he's going to be that good. I think Winston has a shot, but it's just the quarterback position is you're so desperate right now. You will hang on to Cam Newton, and you will pay him any amount of money that you have to. Same with Russell Wilson right now. He's proven himself. You pay the man. You don't want your enemy getting him. I mean, Carolina doesn't want Arizona or the Falcons or Tampa Bay to end up getting Cam Newton and then come back and punish them. But I think Cam's worth the money. And Cuervo, one thing we haven't talked about, and I'm going to move off Cam Newton real quick, is the jersey sales he provides. I mean, he's a smiling face. I mean, he's like he's a marketing genius in a way. He's making this franchise a lot of money, not just by what he does on the field, but off the field too. And one thing I'll tell you about Cam real quick, Cuervo, before we move off to it, he's never really been in trouble. He's never done anything stupid besides that laptop thing when he was a kid at Florida. So he's keeping it clean. He's keeping it about football and building his brand. And I think even after football, Cam Newton could be into acting, be into modeling or something like that. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, and he's got the character for it. He's not like, one of these like stiff type character guys like like Eli Manning or one of those guys. Cam's got a personality. And as long as he doesn't lose that, then I think he's going to be, he could be a guy that can, sell himself as well as the NFL if that's what he decides to do. Honestly, I can see him being a really funny, like, Saturday Night Live host or something like that. I think he'd be good for something like that.
Yeah, there's something more to him besides just some football player. Like, you see some of them, like Andrew Luck, there's nothing he's going to be doing with his life besides football. Peyton Manning, I'm sorry, he has a personality of my toilet here. I mean, he's a great quarterback, but he's just a prude in a way. People, life's changing. Football's changing. People need more sale. They need more of a personality. They want to know you on Twitter. They want you to talk to them on Facebook. this world's changing a lot, and if you don't adapt, you're going to get left behind, and pretty soon Brady's going to be out of the league. You know, some of these quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, all these guys, and the new generation of quarterbacks coming in, what's going to happen? I mean, wherever we don't see quarterbacks anymore. I don't – Winston and Mariota, both of them suck to me. I mean, I'm not impressed with either one of them. Do I think either one of them is going to have anything in the NFL? No. So what is the NFL going to do in order to keep the interest in the game? Because if we have a bunch of Joe Flaccos or people like that and Jay Cutler is running the NFL, I mean, I think people are going to quit watching after a while.
I think what they need to do, Tarvin, honestly, and who knows where this conversation is going to go from here, but I think they need to lighten up on the consequences for doing things like being on social media. Now, if you do something dumb like post a picture of yourself with, like, you know, a woman that's not your spouse or something like that, then, yeah, you're asking for trouble. But if you're, you know, saying, you know, like, for example, oh, you can't tweet an hour prior to the game or something like that, like, how does that affect the outcome of the game at all whatsoever? Like, how does that affect anything? But yet they get fined for it, they get punished for it, and I think it's dumb. And I think the NFL needs to look at, okay, what really truly affects players when it comes to social media and their performance on the field, and what doesn't. And tweeting something like, oh, can't wait for the game, you know, an hour before the game, doesn't have an impact at all. So I think it's dumb.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we're going to move on from the NFL real quick to the favorite thing we like to talk about right now in college football. A lot of preseason magazines out. We've talked about it. The AP has come out predicting Auburn and Ohio State to play for it. It's just, like I told you on the last show, be careful of the preseason magazines that you read. Be careful of who they're telling you is going to be out there, because I see a lot of people jumping on the same bandwagon as some of these guys thinking. These guys, look, it's impossible to know how every college football team is going to do. NFL's a little different. You can actually predict that a lot better. You look at Cuervo and I, we're going to do predictions when it comes to NFL time. You look at what Sonny, Cuervo and I, Trey, Big Dog, Roger, we predict will be pretty accurate and pretty close, because NFL is easier to predict. There's fewer teams. We know the players. We know the quarterbacks. It's easy to learn 32 teams compared to 200. So a lot of preseason people out here, and they make the mistake of, and I'm going to bring Cuervo back on in just a second, but they make the mistake of, okay, you won 9 games last year. You have everybody returning. You should win a national championship or be better this year. That's not how football works. You can have a worse team and actually have a better record. People always underestimate the luck factor in football. Let's look at Auburn in 2010. Won a national championship, went undefeated. Had a good little team, had a dynamic quarterback. But as talented as Cam Newton was, they could have easily been 7-5, 8-4. The ball bounced their way. 2013, this Auburn team went from 3-9 to winning the SEC and playing Florida State, seconds away from a championship. Ball bounced their way. You remember the kick six in the Iron Bowl. You can't predict that, people. The Hail Mary in the Georgia game where it deflected off of a Georgia defender and it hit Auburn in stride for a touchdown to win the game. Auburn could have lost 4 or 5 games that year. The schedule is the most important thing to me that I look at. I mean, once I realize who's coming back and everything, but one thing you cannot predict is luck. And now Ohio State's one of those picks this year where people are out there, they look at it, they realize it's a good team coming back from a national championship team. So the luck factor to me doesn't matter as much, because everybody Ohio State plays is beneath them. There's in the SEC where Auburn's playing Alabama, not much separates them. Auburn's playing Mississippi State, there's not much separation. Ole Miss, Georgia, Louisville, all these teams that they play, and Cuervo can talk about in just a second, there's one bad call, one fumble can change an entire game, where Ohio State's playing Northwestern or Purdue or Illinois, they could fumble the ball five times and still win by four touchdowns. People just, they all of a sudden just think that because so-and-so returns eight starters on defense, that it's going to be a great defense. You never know what can happen in college football. And Cuervo, I mean, tell me what you think about what I said, but also how do you go about, when you look at the preseason predictions, how do you go about determining, just say, if Tennessee is going to be good this year? What factors do you look at?
Well, I mean, the number one thing is what you just said, Tarvin, and that's schedule. You know, I look at the schedule for Tennessee this year. They got to go to the Swamp, okay? They have to play Oklahoma again. Now this time they get to play them at home. That's Oklahoma. So, they're still a powerhouse. I mean, they're still going to be, a team that's going to be a national threat, in my opinion. And we talked about how overrated they are. But because of playing Tennessee, they're probably, that's a game that's very winnable for Oklahoma. I think they play LSU this year. So, you know, right there off the bat, I have to say, and this isn't even looking at their roster, okay, as excited as I am about Joshua Dobbs coming back, for his junior year, things like that, and the depth that Butch Jones is creating over there, those are games that I have a hard time saying that they can win just because of the fact that they're at Florida, they're playing Oklahoma and whatnot. So the number one thing is schedule. And number two, yeah, you can start to look into the roster. But you also got to look at not just the fact that, they have eight starters coming back, like you mentioned. Okay, yeah, eight starters are back. Which three did they lose, though? Were they impact players? Were they guys that were just kind of like guys that just kind of made a play here, made a play there? Or are you talking about an impact player guy, kind of like a Nick Fairley at Auburn when, after they won the national title, he was a huge part of that defense over there at Auburn, or a Cam Newton. I mean, those are guys that Auburn lost, and that played a huge part in why they had such a down year going into the following year. And, so when it comes to that stuff, yeah, I mean, that does play a factor, but I think, like you said, schedule will always, it'll always, be over whether you've got certain guys coming back or not, because injuries can happen, unpredictable things can happen, anything can happen in the season, so you can't always put your eggs in that basket of, the Ohio State's got all three of the quarterbacks coming back, and so we're primed for another national title. Well, What if one decides to transfer last second, and then another one decides he doesn't want to play, or a lot of things can happen. So schedule will always trump the roster, and that's why I was very close, very, very close to picking the final four correct. I got three out of four. The fourth team was a Big Ten team, but it wasn't Ohio State. So I do have to pat myself on the back a little bit, but, three out of four, didn't get that fourth one.
Well, if you look at Auburn 2013, Cuervo, they returned a lot of people last year, but one thing that stood out to me was, and especially at the end of the season, you look at it, five road games, and you had Kansas State at night on the road, you had Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. I don't care how good of a team you are, or what you're bringing back to navigate that schedule and to think you're going to win a national championship, it requires luck. It requires people being healthy. Auburn lost Carl Lawson in the spring that year, which gave them no pass rush. The defense was terrible, and it wore them out playing that schedule. Where if you look at Ohio State, when they're playing a bunch of patsies, it really doesn't matter who's coming back. They have four or five-star players. They have a great coach. They're going to win the majority of their games unless they just get very unlucky. So what I'm trying to give advice and what you're telling people, Cuervo, the same thing. Before you start saying your team's going to win and play in the playoffs, look at the schedule. look at Alabama this year. I mean, this is a very tough schedule for Bama. I know there's a lot of Bama fans that listen to this radio, Cuervo. I've noticed Alabama, and I know they only lost two games last year, but they're starting to drop off a little bit, and they've had favorable schedules. So now when we look at the Alabama Crimson Tide, Cuervo, let's look at their road game. Or first, they start off against Wisconsin and Dallas. I think they'll win, but you never know what Wisconsin's going to do. And then they go to Georgia, to Texas A&M, at Mississippi State, and at Auburn. I mean, those are – tell me what you think, but really that's four road games in a neutral. That's not easy for Alabama compared to last year where they went to Ole Miss, to Arkansas, to Tennessee, and to LSU. You got Auburn, Mississippi State on that schedule right now, and Georgia. So Alabama, without a quarterback, Cuervo, they could be in some trouble this year. Do you agree with that?
I can see that, Tarvin. However, we all thought that last year too, and they were a game away from making another national title. So I think
sure.
As long as Nick Saban's there, they're always going to be a threat, and they're always going to be right there in the mix. But again, you make a great point. You know, all those road games and things like that. Mississippi State could be a team that can be a threat again. I don't think you have to worry about Ole Miss too much, but Mississippi State, I think, will be back. LSU will always be, as long as Les Miles is their coach, they're going to be a threat. So, it's going to be a really interesting year, I think, in the SEC. With a lot of the changes that were made, as far as little things like. You didn't have an SEC team play in the national championship game, so now people are gonna think that they're on. You know, oh, they can be beaten. Now, I think the reality of it is the SEC is gonna show again who's boss. But I think it's gonna be a tough road. Whoever makes it at the end is it's gonna be a thing that's gonna have certain things.
Yeah, I totally agree. But let's look at, we had Auburn last year. We talked about their five road games against top 10 teams. This year, early in the season, a day game at LSU, at Kentucky, at Arkansas, and at A&M. To me, that's a lot better schedule for them. So just say me picking Auburn this year in the playoff, if I do, compared to last year, makes a lot more sense because I have a lot more ammunition to be able to come and tell you why. And based off what they have returning, their talent, the recruiting, and that schedule. To be able to play LSU at 3:30 in the afternoon early in the season, because LSU usually dominates people towards the end. They get rolling. But with the quarterback inconsistencies, one of their quarterbacks arrested just over the weekend. I mean, I'd rather play Kentucky and Arkansas on the road than I would go to Georgia and Alabama, of course. Having Georgia and Alabama at home, that's the kind of things I'm looking at. And I look at the Clemson Tigers. You look at Clemson, what they have to deal with. That's my team in the ACC this year. I know everybody is on that Florida State bandwagon, how great and talented they are. True, they are talented. But I look at their schedule, and I look at Clemson's. Where Clemson's road games right now, Cuervo, at Louisville, at Miami, at NC State, and at South Carolina, where their home games, they have Notre Dame at home, Georgia Tech at home, Boston College, Florida State, Wake Forest. So I look at stuff like that with the schedule. Let's go to Florida State on the road, at Boston College, at Wake Forest, at Georgia Tech, at Clemson, at Florida. That Clemson-Florida State game, Cuervo, could be who wins the ACC, really. That's how big it is, home field. So who do you like between Clemson and Florida State if you had to pick today?
If I had to pick today, Tarvin, I think by the slimmest of margins, that you said that Florida State-Clemson game is going to be at Florida State?
No, it's at Clemson.
Yeah, see, that right there, what that tells me is that with a new quarterback at Florida State, they lost a couple of their receivers. They lost guys on defense. I don't know if Florida State is in that we don't rebuild, we reload
system just yet. I think I'm with you. I think I would give a slight advantage to Clemson. I think they're just a little more established, a little more deep, and I think I would have to say that right now, Clemson would probably be the better pick. Now that could change, but right now, I mean, you look at Clemson, how close they've gotten in years past. You know, eventually they're gonna get over that hump and they're gonna find a way to get to that next level.
And I agree totally. And starting in July, WIN Sports Talk is going to start breaking down these teams, these conferences. We're waiting. I have to wait, though. I have a rule. I don't start until after the 4th of July. We have a lot of teams to cover, a lot of conferences. I need a little more information, but we're going to personally go through 2 to 3 teams every show, 2 shows a week, until we can navigate this schedule. But Cuervo, before we go tonight, I have a topic I wanted to bring up. And I wanted to see what you thought and the listeners thought about. I don't know if you're familiar, if you kept up with it, the stipends that now the extra benefits per student, per athlete to sign with a different school. I don't know if you kept up to that, but there's a lot of teams that can get more money for kids coming for a scholarship than some of the other ones. And it would surprise you, the list. I'm going to read the list in a few minutes. But what do you think about Auburn being able to pay almost $6,000 per student, where Alabama can only pay $3,000. Is that fair, and how big of a difference is that going to make in recruiting?
Well, I think it makes a huge difference because money talks, you know, and when Benjamins are involved, because that's everybody's best friend. Everyone knows Benjamin, everybody's friends with Benjamin, and everybody likes Benjamin. So everybody – you know, the more Bens you have, more Benjamins you have, the better chance you're going to have of recruiting these kids. And you know, it's a slimy way of doing it, I guess you could say, but it's going to work, and it's going to get kids to commit. And from that point, the recruiters and the coaches have done their job. They've got these kids to commit, and they're going to play for their football team. And you know, it's like I said, it's just money talks, and that's all you really need. It's, you know, you can sit here and talk about, well, these kids should know better, and blah. Go back to when you were 18, a senior in high school, and you know you're a top prospect in your state for football, whether, you know, no matter what position you play. You mean to tell me that if you went back to when you were 18, you would deny money because it's the quote-unquote right thing to do? Come on, get out of here. You're 18 years old. All you think about are girls and cars and money. That's it. That's all you care about. That's all that matters in life. Football comes around when it's that time. But any other time of the year, especially in the summer, it's all about girls, cars, and money. That is it.
Yeah. When the fact that Tennessee and Auburn are the top two in the country – if paying, Tennessee is $5,666, Auburn $5,586. But I think we have a huge problem because this could be somebody's waiting to choose between. And here, tradition doesn't mean anything to kids these days. You're right, money, fame, women, whatever they can get their hands on. But you got a kid that loves Auburn and Alabama, wants to go, and all of a sudden they're going to get a $6,000 check handed to them by Auburn if they sign, or a $3,000 check by Alabama. I mean, that's a big deal. I don't think people realize this is not a good thing for college athletics, because I think everyone should have the same payout. But when you run into a problem, how is Troy, how is Southern Miss going to pay the same kind of money as, say, Auburn or Alabama or Florida State? And that's another problem we're going to run up with. What do you think about every school gets the same? If you're going to do this, every athlete gets $3,000 regardless. That way, because Dabo spoke about this, he's upset because these are not made by the athletic departments. This is by the finance departments of how profitable your school, how much they're going to be willing to pay. And Auburn even said they're willing to go back up actually more, another $1,000. So this could be a war going on for recruits. You talk about some dirty recruiting right now. My God. I mean, what are you going to do if you're Alabama? Say, kid, I know we can't pay as much as Auburn, but here's 10 grand from a booster I'm going to give you. That's what you're going to be running into.
And that's the loophole around it, Tarvin, is you may not get that extra money from the school, but you got people that work for the school that's going to shake your hand with a little stack of $100 bills. Or, you know, you may just have to mysteriously find a blank envelope in your mailbox with, you know, $2,000 in there or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, those are the numbers that are being reported based off of the school's profits. But we're not talking about the outside sources here. We're not talking about the resources that these schools have. For example, I'll give you a big one, and this is a school that I'm sure everybody and their brother has a tie to, is the U, Miami, University of Miami. And that's going to be a school that I think you want to talk about paying some money and being able to sell, you know, things like South Beach. And you got the girls, you got the money, you got whatever, you know, like Miami, I think, is a program that could really benefit from the way that aspect is going to play out. And, you know, as far as the schools, like you were talking about Southern Miss and Troy and all those schools, the type of kids that those schools are going to get, Tarvin, are going to be the kids that want to stay close to home, you know, because they help mom and dad on, you know, working back home and things like that. And they want to stay close to home. Or, and this happens a lot in the South, and you could disagree, you could tell me I'm wrong if you'd like, but from what I remember, you got some parents that will just 100% totally, utterly refuse to let their kid even think about leaving anywhere near home. No, my son is not going to go play for the University of Georgia because I am Auburn alumni, or I know my son will not play for Alabama because I don't like Nick Saban. My son is staying right here, and he's going to play for Southern Miss or whatever the case may be. Because you got those parents who are very stern on their kids, and the kids will be like, hey, mommy and daddy said I'm not going, so I'm not going. Don't call me no more. And it's a done deal. And that's how it is in the South. Now, tell me I'm wrong, Tarvin. I could be wrong, but that's how I remember it.
You're right. And, I mean, it just blows my mind that Rutgers can pay more than Alabama right now. Alabama, $2,800 is what they're able to pay.
And I don't understand that at all.
Kansas is $3,000. LSU, $3,000. Maryland, $3,100. So, I just, you know, it's like a company. You know, we work. If there's two jobs exactly the same, one pays me $100,000, one's going to pay me $120,000. And everything's equal, I'm choosing the $120,000. But what if that company that's $100,000 is more of a reputable company? What if it has better retirement benefits? What if they negotiate vacation more with you? So really, is that $20,000 worth the future benefits? And I think that's how you got to look at it. If you don't go to Alabama because they only give you $3,000, then do you think Alabama really wants you there? Because at the end of the day, I don't understand how they come up with these numbers. I don't understand all of it. But if that's your final decision, is whether you're going to make a couple grand, and you're probably not the right fit for the school anyway. But you know kids, Cuervo. You deal with them every day in your job. This is a big deal in college athletics right now, and it's going to be huge in recruiting. These teams that can't pay are not going to get the players, especially when we're talking about like Mississippi State and Auburn, or Clemson's and Auburn are battling for somebody, or Southern Cal, they're paying like lowest as anybody of any team battling somebody. Something needs to be done because this is going to get out of hand. And you talk about some under the table cheating going on now. Imagine now what's going to happen. Now these boosters see it in writing that Alabama can only give such amount of money, they're going to be more bold. They're going to be more aggressive. That's when you get caught, Cuervo, is when you start getting desperate. You make mistakes. You get sloppy, and all of a sudden the NCAA is shutting your program down.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think and I'm not an Urban Meyer hater. However, I think one of the first programs we could hear about is Ohio State. Because as you've mentioned before, Urban Meyer is a snake in the grass. And you want to talk about a snake becoming a python? That's going to be Urban Meyer. He's going to become one, you know, a damn python in the grass. He's not even a garden snake anymore. He's going to get crazy
over
in Columbus. Yeah, he's going to be the king, right? So, and because you think about it, you know, now in the Big Ten, you got some guy Harbaugh up there in Ann Arbor, okay? Urban Meyer, he will find a way to get the advantage over Michigan, over Mid-State, and all the other, you know, Wisconsin. Like, he's got to worry about those are the three ones. Even Penn State could be a team that could show up here in the next couple of years and be a contender for the Big Ten. But I think since we've heard so much about Urban Meyer in the past and whatnot, I mean, don't be shocked if we hear about Ohio and, you know, some shenanigans.
Well, Cuervo, I'm going to have to cut this show just a little bit short, but thanks for joining me tonight. Think about all the callers out there about this stipend and what it means for your school. What's your fears? What do you think could happen with the NCAA? Do you agree with what they're doing? Do you disagree? So next show we have Sunday night, I'd like for people to call in and discuss this. I know I didn't give much notice tonight we were going to do a show program, but we'll be back next Sunday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Cuervo, hope you can join us. Everybody out there, have a great week, and we'll start being more consistent now that football's getting close. So we'll talk to you soon, Cuervo.
All right. Thanks for having me.